This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Paul, you don't want to compare them, but do you expect Laine to show Barkov who's the daddy here in Finland?
Oh.
So welcome to Europe, eh? I never get asked a question like that. First of all, I'm not even sure what that means. I'm old. I think it'll be a great contest.
The early favorite for press conference question of the year given to Jets head coach Paul Maurice overseas in Finland as the Jets and Panthers prepare for their two-game stint starting tomorrow afternoon. Happy Halloween, everybody, and welcome to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Sean Assor and Ezra Ginsberg. Reminder, if you're listening to us on
the
radio...
It's actually Goolsberg.
Goolsberg?
Yeah.
Okay, then should I be Boo Mindell in that case?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, Ezra Goolsberg, Boo Mindell, and Sean Assor.
I got nothing.
I don't know. It's very clever. Sean Assor doesn't become a scary name very, very easily.
Not when you got a face like this.
No, that's scary enough as is. You're very well done there. Anyways, good evening and welcome to the program. Again, reminder, it's Halloween. Drive safe out there, folks. There's little ones running around, excited to get their candy. So as you're driving around today, maybe, more on the brake than on the gas on this Wednesday evening as we want to take care of all the little kiddies getting their candy. My daughter went out for her first Halloween earlier tonight.
Oh, exciting.
So that was a lot of fun seeing her go door to door and experience the trick or treating, as it were. Something you're very soon to experience yourself there, Mr. Ginsberg.
I don't know why you didn't bring any candy, Drew.
None of us brought any candy.
Last 10 minutes, we've been talking about why there's no candy.
It's Halloween. I was like, okay, it's going to be Sean, Drew, and I, and obviously producer Chris, and we don't have one piece of candy in the studio right now.
It's surprising, because we usually have
nothing.
Candy.
There aren't even any wrappers.
No. Like, we have candy usually on, a Saturday morning show, and we're not above eating candy. And then all of a sudden, on Halloween, there is no candy.
Don't we even have a segment about candy today?
We do. The last segment will be about candy.
There was a box of nerds in here, but Darren Bombing, who was on before us, obviously took those. So.
Well, I don't blame DB. If there's a box of nerds sitting there that are unattended, I'm probably going to get my hands on those. That was always my favorite terrible candy for you when I was a kid.
Really? The nerds?
Yeah, I was a big nerd guy.
I like nerds, too.
Yeah.
The blue and the orange pack?
Yeah, they split them in half. Yeah. You get half the candy.
You're a big nerd guy, but you're not talking about the candy.
No, I was waiting. I'm surprised it took you that long to come up with that one there, Mr. Clever. Anyways, let's get talking about hockey. The Jets and the Panthers, of course, are overseas in Finland, and they have been there since, I guess, they arrived Sunday morning flying the red eye, the Jets did, after their defeat in Toronto. It's been sort of been a long week as everybody's gearing up for the games tomorrow and Friday. They're doing all the, the pregame hoopla and the press conferences and everything else. But a lot of the focus, as you would expect, is on Patrick Laine, given that he's heading home to Finland. And I think his star is brighter in Finland than Alex Barkov's is. Not to say that Barkov is a slouch by any stretch, but I mean, this is, Patrick Laine is the be-all and end-all right now.
He's the most popular athlete in Finland.
Of Finnish hockey right now, certainly, he's the be-all
and end-all.
And
we've had Pekka Jalonen on the show before.
Sure.
Many times before. He's a hockey writer in Finland, and he said that Laine, by far, is the most popular athlete.
That's right. So,
and it makes sense. I mean, when you're 18 years old and you're putting up, 36 goals and then, 44 at 19 years old, I mean, he's a generational player.
And all the talk about Patrick Laine in the last week, 2 weeks, is his struggles, his inability to produce anything 5-on-5 this season, the slump that he's been in. He's now being moved around. He was on the fourth line for a little while. Now he's going to be on, I guess, the third line if the lines stay the same, as they have been in practice. Do you think this trip to Finland, home cooking, home ice, home spotlight, is going to be good for getting Patrick Laine reinvigorated? Is going to be good for letting him find his game and get back to being the dominant goal scorer that Jets fans expected him to be this year?
I really hope this two-game set gets him going, Drew, because I think it is getting to his head a little bit, guys.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Patrick Laine is a guy that obviously has a lot of pride, and even though he's 20 years old, I mean, he wants to do his best every time he goes out there. He wants to score goals. He wants to have an impact on the game. And, I thought there were moments in that game in Toronto that you saw the Patrick Laine of last year. Certainly the game in Winnipeg against Toronto that they lost.
Wednesday.
That was arguably Laine's worst game of the year. And it's funny because on Saturday's show, we talked about Well, at least I talked about how the one line that I didn't expect Line A to be on was the third line. And I'll admit, I was wrong. I just didn't expect Line A to be playing in that capacity with Adam Lowry and with Brandon Tanev, because that's your checking line. That's your shutdown line. And you better believe, by the way, that Paul Maurice is going to want that line up against the Alexander Barkov line. Obviously, you know, Florida is going to have last change tomorrow. The point is, you know, Line A is not putting the puck in the net right now. We know that. I mean, it's been well documented, not only on this station, but across North America in the hockey world, that Line A hasn't scored an even strength goal. So, you know, with these two games coming up, he's going to get to go head to head with Alexander Barkov. He's going to get all the opportunity to get out of this goal scoring slump. It's hard to say those three words together because we haven't seen a goal scoring slump like this in his 3 years in the NHL. But, you know, all I can say, Drew, is I really do hope that he does get it going, because, you know, he's a guy that has to have an impact on the game, I think, to really feel good about himself. So, you know, I do think he is going to score in these two games. I realize a lot of people are kind of down on Line A right now, but just because he's on the third line, I don't think that's going to change anything. I think he's going to play the similar way, and, you know, I do think he is going to get a bounce that goes his way.
Sean, what about it? Do you think that, you know, sort of taking him, I mean, he's obviously in the spotlight. Is that going, and previously when he's been in the spotlight, you remember the times where he said he's not playing hockey very well right now, or hockey is hard, and then he comes back and he scores, you know, 7 goals in 4 games or something like that. Hockey is clearly hard for him right now, or certainly was hard when he came overseas to Finland. Is the home cooking going to change things? Is it going to make hockey easier for him?
Well, there's no doubt about it that he's going into a situation where there's even more pressure on him now to perform. We can all agree on that, right?
Yes.
Whether or not, he's always seems to be the guy that kind of thrives under that pressure. I mean, you look at his Liga playoffs and what he did as a, what is it, I believe, 17-year-old, and then he comes into the league and there's that pressure on him. And then this year it's, and obviously last year with the 44 goals, but this year it's just not going his way. And he's fighting it. He's got no points in his last 5 games, just from looking at his last 5. It could be longer, pardon me. But you just hope that maybe, like, the fresh air of Finland and just being in a familiar area, you know, he's got his family there. I don't know if his family still lives with him in Winnipeg. I'm not sure about that situation, but he is with his family. He's with his fans, you know, guys that pretty much idolize him. So if he is going to get a kick in the butt and a jolt, it's going to be in Finland, in his home country. And you just hope that the pressure isn't too much for him into these two games. We had Kevin Sawyer on, and he says, even if Line A, or earlier today, and he said, even if Line A, even the pressure builds to a tremendous amount and he doesn't perform in Finland, coming back should hit the reset button. And you should see him start to fill the net a little bit more, get a little bit more of that confidence that he came overseas with originally, and hopefully a little taste of home cooking, some chicken wings and sauna trips.
You know,
help out.
And we saw the video of him and Sasha Barkov.
It's a lot of sauce.
Apparently the chicken wings in Finland are all the rage. Chicken, you know, which I really didn't know, but admittedly I'm somewhat ignorant on Finnish culture in general. But apparently the chicken wings in Finland are where it's at. I mean, it's worth noting that if you go back to the playoffs last year, the last time Patrick Laine scored an even strength goal during the playoffs was game 2 against the Minnesota Wild. I mean, it's not like this has necessarily been just these 12 games. Mm-hmm. You got the 12 games, and then you got more games last year. Now, you know, he didn't talk about it as much as he got 3 power play goals during the series against the Predators and then the Golden Knights. And so he performed on the power play there pretty well. But even strength, this is now going back to being about 20 or 25 games now that he hasn't performed at even strength and hasn't been able to score at even strength. So at some point in time, it becomes more than just an anomaly. Mm-hmm. It becomes maybe the way it is.
Right, but we know Line A can score goals in bunches, right?
Sure.
And this is going on 5 games now. He doesn't have a point in the last 5 games. So he's in a slump. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. The one reason I don't think I'm as concerned as some is because of the shots. I mean, usually when you see a guy really slumping, he's not getting the shots. You look at his last 7 or 8 games, he's averaging 4 or 5 shots. Last game, he only had the 1 shot, but you go back to Detroit, 3 shots. The game in Winnipeg against Toronto, 4 shots. Against St. Louis, 5 shots. The game against Edmonton, obviously, the Jets lost in overtime, 7 shots. You go back to the home opener against St. Louis, 5 shots. The point is, I mean, his shooting percentage is going to come up, Drew. And I realize, you know, part of the reason why he's struggling, guys, is because he has moved from line two to line four to back to line two. Now he's on mm-hmm. line three. And I don't think any of us think that Patrick Laine is going to stick on that third line.
I mean, I'd be surprised if it was a long term. Unless they're successful. I mean, if they're successful, then maybe they stick with it. But to me, it seems like even if he is successful,
I don't think you can have him playing with Adam Lowry. And that's no disrespect to Adam
Lowry. I don't disagree with you.
You got to have him in a top six role. He's got to be playing top minutes at even strength. You know he's going to go out there on the first power play unit. So I'm hopeful. And obviously, I'm a glass half full type of guy, Drew. But I do think that Laine is going to end, you know, this even strength goal scoring slump that he's in. You know, he's a guy that has thrived in, you know, the high pressure situations. He's a guy that's won gold at the World Junior Championship, right? He was on that line with Jesse Puljujärvi, and was it Sebastian Aho mm-hmm. was the other guy
yeah,
on that line?
That's right.
So I mean, this is a guy that's elevated his game on the big stage. So I really do think he is going to have success in these two games in Finland. But, you know, right now he's still trying to figure some things out. Guys, this is the first prolonged slump of his NHL career. You forget, he's only 20 years old. He's going to score goals. You know, it's just been a really tough start to the season, I think.
What better way to kind of start feeling better about yourself and your goal-scoring abilities than going up against the Florida Panthers team? But if you look at their goaltending numbers,
it's been
ghoulish.
Yeah. You're right. The goaltending has been an issue for the Florida Panthers. In fact, when we come back, we'll talk more about the Jets' opponent, the Panthers. George Richards, who covers the Panthers for TheAthletic.com, is going to join us as well. Much more to come on the Jets and the Panthers overseas in Finland. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Like you said, there's points on the line, so that's... that's why we're here. We're here to get 4 points, and it's a business trip for us. And now the fun part's over. Game day tomorrow, it's just a normal day. It doesn't matter if we play in Winnipeg or we play here.
That's Patrick Laine speaking to the media earlier today in Finland, getting set for tomorrow afternoon's Jets-Panthers game. It's a 1 o'clock puck drop here on TSN 1290, and same time for Friday, of course, 1 o'clock, which is prime time overseas there in Finland for the game. So you'd be sure to get your office radio, get your desk radio if you're at work, and tune it right to this fine station here, TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth tooting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So we know that Patrick Laine is going to at least start the game tomorrow with Brandon Tanev and Adam Lowry. Do you think those are decent line mates for him as he's looking to get out of the slump? You know, you got Ehlers with Scheifele and Wheeler, and they've been okay together since they've been put together. And Connor with Little and Perreault, and that sort of Perreault has been elevated from that fourth line role. I think people were surprised to see TLC being broken up, not the band, but the line. So do you think that Laine with Lowry and Tanev could work?
Well, we saw a little bit of that line, obviously, against the Leafs in Toronto, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, when you're talking about Adam Lowry, by the way, he's killing the faceoff circle this year. And that's been well documented, really close to 60%. It's going to be a much different look than playing with Brian Little and Nikolai Ehlers, right? So when you're talking about, you know, this line, I mean, this is going to be a bit of a dump and chase, you know, grinding pucks along the boards, in the corners, and, you know, trying to set up Laine for that one-timer, right? I mean, Brandon Tanev's job, and he does it very well, he's a speedy forechecker, his job is to dig up those pucks and, you know, try to feed Laine. Same thing goes with, you know, Adam Lowry. And when you're talking about this line, I mean, it's got speed, it's got size, right? So it's very interesting to me what they're going to do in this game against Florida. Because as I mentioned last segment, Drew, I don't think this line is going to stay together long term. I don't even think it's going to stay together 4 or 5 games. I really don't. And even if Laine scores a couple of goals, I really don't think it's going to stay together for longer than, you know, 1 or 2 games. Paul Maurice, guys, is trying to get Laine going. I mean, he's a first-line guy or a second-line guy. It hasn't worked as of late. It didn't work out on the fourth line. I mean, you can't have him playing, you know, 4 or 5 even strength minutes with, you know, Jack Roslovic and Brendan Lemieux, whoever it is. So I do think this line is going to have some success. I mean, that's going to be a very key line for the Jets, because when you go up and down these rosters, I mean, Evgeny Dadonov, Alexander Barkov, Nick Bjugstad on that top line. I mean,
for the Panthers,
I think that, you know, and you know, Bob Bugner alluded to this, guys. If you listen to his scrum today, I mean, he's probably going to try to get that line out against the Scheifele line, Ehlers, Scheifele, and Wheeler, and obviously Paul Maurice, I think, is going to want to try to get the Lowry line up against the Barkov line. You'll probably see, you know, Vinny Trocheck, Johnny Huberdeau, and I think it's going to be Dennis Malgin on the right wing of that second line. You'll probably see that line up against the Little line, Little and Connor. So line matchups are going to be very key, but that Patrick Laine line is going to play a very important role, because if they're not able to get that matchup, I think it's going to be a mismatch for the Panthers, and it's going to benefit the Jets if you're able to put out, you know, the Adam Lowry line against the Jared McCann line. I know they've had Frank Vetrano on that line.
Mike Hoffman.
I think Mike Hoffman is also. So, I mean, that's going to be a very interesting matchup, the Lowry line versus the Jared McCann line. And then obviously, you know, the fourth lines we're not going to see as much. But, you know, he's obviously trying, Paul Maurice, that is trying to get Line A going. And we know that that line brings a lot of energy. So
is Paul Maurice trying to get Patrick Laine going now by almost simplifying the game that he's going to have to play? I mean, Brandon Tanev and Adam Lowry play simple games, and they really won't be expected to contribute much offensively. So is Paul Maurice saying, you know, to Tanev and Lowry, you guys go do what you do, which is a lot of the dirty work, a lot of the dirty, you know, the dirty things going to the dirty areas, win those battles, and I have an ace up my sleeve now, or you guys now have an ace up your sleeve on this line, which is Patrick Laine going up against potentially weaker competition with really one task at hand, which is be productive offensively, and he doesn't have to worry as much about setting up his line mates as well. Sort of taking the, you know, when he's playing with Ehlers, I think there was always the chemistry issue that maybe Laine was trying, is a little too unselfish, and he's trying to set up Ehlers more than just taking it for himself.
The 2-on-0, a perfect example.
But playing now with Tanev and Lowry, there won't be an expectation to necessarily have to set up his line mates for their offensive piece of the pie.
Listen, whether you're asking Brandon Tanev and Adam Lowry to do all the digging work and just feed the puck to Patrick Laine, that is unfair. That's an unfair ask for those two gentlemen. What I think they're trying to do with Patrick Laine is to get his feet moving into the hard areas. I hate to sound like a broken record, but I really like the way Kevin Sawyer put it on the Don Vito Roundtable earlier today. They're going to drag Laine into the fight with them.
Yep.
They are going to increase the grit and the level of intensity that he needs to play with if they're going to keep up with him. And if he's going to be productive, he's going to have to get them the puck and move to open areas. Because there's one thing that that line does very well. They throw area passes to one another, and it allows them to cycle down low. Asking Brandon Tanev and Adam Lowry to do that as a two-man unit and just find Patrick Laine open on an island by himself is a ridiculous ask. But what this is going to do is it's going to show Patrick Laine that he needs to move his feet, as the entire world heard Byfuglien yell at him in Toronto, and add a little bit of grit and determination to a 6'5", 200-plus frame.
Shawnee, you just nailed it. I mean, those are great points that you bring up. That's exactly why Paul Maurice is putting Laine out there with Lowry and Tanev. That's why. He's a big body, and he wants him to go to those dirty areas. Shawnee just mentioned it. I mean, that line of Brian Little, Nikolai Ehlers, and Laine, that's an offensive line. I mean, that's a very dynamic line that hasn't clicked. It's hard to understand why it hasn't clicked. I mean, we've talked about it a lot on the show.
For two years now,
I mean, Laine hasn't gotten the puck enough, and I think their zone entries and their puck retrievals haven't been good. I mean, we could get into the advanced stats and all that, but I think it's going to be very interesting. Sean makes a good point. I mean, they're going to try to generate off of the cycle, right? They're going to crash and bang bodies, hopefully, in the Florida Panthers zone, and they're going to try to get Patty Laine, you know, in that dangerous area in front of the net. They're going to try to feed him pucks. We might see it only for the one game. We might see it for a couple of games. You know, as I mentioned, I don't think we're going to see it for, you know, 2 weeks or 3 weeks or anything like that. But that Tanev-Lowry cop line, and I told this to you, Drew, after the first preseason game, they've been the hardest working line since the preseason.
Sure.
They set a great example. He really hopes that this line kind of gives those two guys on the line right now, Lowry and Tanev, they hope that he can, you know, get him going not only offensively, but they can get that kind of jump and that spark back in his game.
You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're talking about Patrick Laine. We're talking about the Jets and Panthers. They're going to do battle, of course, tomorrow afternoon in Finland, the 1 o'clock puck drop here on this fine station. Ezzy, to your point about Adam Lowry, he's 12th overall in faceoff wins this season. Mark Scheifele, 9th overall, although Scheifele, it's interesting, has more losses in the he's still under 50%.
How many kickouts does he have in there? Because that guy gets kicked out more than anyone.
Yeah. Scheifele's won the ninth most draws, but his face-off win percentage is only 46.7%.
Right.
Lowry's is up at 58.7%.
I think Little's around 54%. Or last time I checked, he was.
I'll look into that one as well. But so they are doing some good things. Adam Lowry is doing some good things in the draw.
Yeah, he's highly regarded as one of the team's very important face-off men. But as we were just like discussing this, and like you talked about, Drew, maybe a simplifying of his game, you think that one thing that line does so well, the TLC line, was they would throw pucks into a corner and they would go get it. So you have to think that rather than looking into the middle of the ice, where we know Patrick Laine's had some trouble with turnovers, that backhand into the middle, we all gasp every time we see it, but you have to think maybe Paul Maurice sat him down and said, listen, just dump the puck in and let Brandon Tanev run whoever is in the behind the blue line into the boards, and you and Lowry can go get the puck and then just work your magic. Like, you have to assume that you're going to use the tools on that line to his advantage and not try to change what they've been doing right.
And I think, Shawnee, the big advantage that the Jets have right now is the two goaltenders that the Panthers are going to put out there. Because even though Connor Hellebuck's numbers might be a little bit down, quite frankly, I think it's ridiculous that we're even talking about Hellebuck's numbers being a little bit down. The guy just was nominated for the Vezina Trophy. He's one of the best goalies in the entire league. So let's stop talking about how his numbers are down, first of all.
Hutchinson's save percentage, as to your point about the Panthers' goaltending. Luongo's been on the shelf for most of the year. They might see him for Friday's game, but that's still very much up in the air.
I heard he may come back after.
Yeah. Right. All we know, guys, is Bobby Lou is practicing, but he's not going to play. So I imagine there's a good chance you see both goalies. James Reimer.
I would expect Reimer
is going to get the start tomorrow afternoon.
I would expect Hutchinson against Lauren Brossoit on
Friday. And I mean, what better way to get Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers going than put a few past James Reimer? And, you know, I like James Reimer, obviously a good Manitoba boy, but, you know, he's struggling.
878 save percentage with a 3.41 goals against average. And Hutchinson is even lower. He's at an 839 save percentage and a 4.17 goals against average.
And you better believe,
Which, of course, means
Drew,
he's getting a shutout on Friday as against his old team.
Exactly.
And you better believe they're going to try to put 21 shots up on him in the period like they did against Jimmy Howard in Detroit, right? So, you know, hopefully they're able to expose the Panthers' weak goaltending right now.
Let me ask you guys this quickly.
By the way, I just wanted to mention two things, Drew. The Panthers allow the fewest shots per game. A lot of people don't know about that. A few interesting things about this Panthers team. I picked them to be a playoff team.
Is that interesting, or is that just an aside?
Eight of their nine losses have been one-goal losses, first of all. So people look at the record and they say, well, you know, the Panthers are off to a horrible start. Eight of their nine losses, one-goal losses. And they allow the fewest shots in the entire league, and they're top five in the league in possession. So even though the Panthers might have a terrible record,
their underlying numbers are better than that.
So which means they're not getting any saves.
Yeah, which means their goaltending is certainly their Achilles heel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, those numbers, you can't sugarcoat those numbers whatsoever. Quickly, before we're going to bring in George Richards at the end, in the next segment, are you surprised that the Jets elected to take Tucker Poolman as opposed to Sami Niku or Christian Vesalainen?
I didn't think it was going to be Sami Niku, Drew. I mean, the plan is to have Sami Niku play the entire year with the Manitoba Moose. Obviously, we all saw the beautiful goal by Sami Niku. He's going to be in the NHL eventually, guys. I mean, he's the best defenseman in the AHL, I believe, and he was last year. So he's going to be in the NHL. But I didn't think it was going to be Niku. For me, it was going to be Vesalainen, and it makes a lot of sense because he's from Finland. I mean, everybody knows that. So I was a little bit surprised, but not that surprised, Drew, when you consider that the extra defensemen that the Jets have are left-shot defensemen, right? So I'm thinking if there's an injury on the right side, that's why you bring Tucker Poolman, who also has the ability to play on the left side. But as we know, Joe Morrow has been that extra defenseman along with Dmitry Kulikov. So, I mean, that's the reasoning why Paul Maurice brings Tucker Poolman.
Shawnee?
Yeah, I was a little surprised that neither of them are on the trip just to be a part of the experience. But if they're better off served developing in the minors and it's just strictly a roster necessity move to bring Poolman along, then so be it.
When we come back, George Richards of TheAthletic.com is going to join us. George covers the Florida Panthers. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Halfway through the bottom of the first hour, that was sort of a mouthful. I meant to say it. We're at the bottom of the first hour because we're not yet halfway through the entire show. So the bottom of the first hour, welcome back. to NHL this week. Happy Halloween for all those listening, especially if you're, you know, walking around with some of your little ones and you're, you know, streaming us via the iHeartRadio app. Remember, keep it safe out there. Keep your foot on the brake more than on the gas.
Whoa, that's a scary costume, Drew.
Why do you encourage him, Sean?
It's the shock value. I'm sorry. That was genuine.
You're very funny, Ezra. You know, you're very, very funny. Anyways, we're working hard to get George Richards of TheAthletic.com on the line with us to talk about the Florida Panthers. In the meantime, this segment of the show brought to you by our friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program George Richards from TheAthletic.com. He covers the Florida Panthers. George, happy Halloween. We appreciate you joining us.
Oh, no problem. Just sitting out here giving out Kit Kats and Snickers.
Ooh. Oh, I'm more of a coffee crisp guy myself. That's what I'm saying. But I'll take a Kit Kat in a pinch. You know, so just, you know, send that on to Winnipeg. We'll be fine with that.
And George, no ketchup chips either in the U.S.
What's that?
No ketchup chips in the U.S.
Oh yeah, we're starting to get those. Yeah, they're starting to make.
Oh,
them.
Nice.
There you go.
Yeah, we got the fully dressed, and we're starting to get the ketchup chip.
Nice. Yeah, it's a good thing we have that free trade agreement, so we can continue.
No,
this.
Is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, we'd be in chaos. George obviously brought you on to talk about the Panthers. They're playing the Jets.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Not about chips and
Halloween
candy. Hold on.
Can we go back to the mini Kit Kats?
Yeah, we can.
We need to keep going.
Yeah. You know, the Panthers, you know, struggling to start the year with, you know, their record isn't great when you look at it in terms of, you know, their straight winning percentage and things of that nature. Do you think this trip overseas will galvanize the team, or are they, you know, or do you think this is just an opportunity, just some other games for a team that's really desperate to get some wins in the win column?
I think it's, they're just desperate. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you could talk about, you know, trying to go on the road and all the stuff that happens there, and you know, they've had an opportunity to go on the road a little bit. They've been to, you know, Philadelphia and New York, a week there in New York, and they only won one out of three there against a struggling Rangers team. And New Jersey hadn't won a game, you know, had lost three straight and beat the Panthers. So I don't know. I mean, we're going to find out. They're playing a very good Winnipeg team. You know, it could just be more of the same for them, but yeah, it's been a very disappointing start for a team that felt like they could, you know, going to be able to do something, and still may. I mean, it's only nine games in. They've only played nine, so they still have time to right this ship. But, you know, having to play back-to-backs against Winnipeg probably is not the best, you know, recipe for a team that's struggling.
George, Mike Hoffman enters the two back-to-back games in Finland against the Jets, scoring goals in four straight games. And, you know, this is a player who obviously was, you know, there was a lot of controversy surrounding him. I think you know that very well yourself. And he was acquired for the draft picks. And, you know, he's up to five goals on the season. Is he finally starting to get comfortable with his new teammates in Florida?
Yeah, he's kind of an odd situation because it just doesn't seem like the Panthers really know where to play him. I mean, yes, he is producing. He's one of the few guys on this team who is producing, but they've been running him up and down the lineup. He started on the second line. It appeared to be a perfect fit, when they acquired him, putting him on the second line with Vincent Trocheck, and then they moved him to the fourth line. Now he's on the third line, and he's on the, you know, they've just been moving him up and down, but the guy has been scoring. You know, he's got a game winner. I forget which game, he got the game winner a couple of good nights ago and, against the Islanders. And, you know, I think he's playing well. I think he is just trying to fit in. I think there maybe was a little bit of pressure, put on him because, you know, all the talk was, you know, here's a guy the Panthers desperately needed and now have and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, he is starting to find his rhythm, but it has been weird just the way that he's been shuffled up and down through the lineup.
Hey, George, I know it's early, but what have you seen out of Alexander Barkov now that he's wearing the C, you know, both on the ice and maybe in the dressing room as a leader to the Florida Panthers?
Yeah, I mean, he's been struggling a little bit. I mean, he hasn't been scoring the way that he's accustomed, and Florida's kind of counting on him to get hot as they move forward, and maybe playing in Finland will help help rectify some of that. But I think he was a good choice to be the next captain of the Panthers. I think there's a lot of respect in that room for the way the guy goes about his business, the way the way he works and does things off the ice, and the way he plays the game. He plays it the right way, and I think there's he's not a rah-rah guy, but I think we've seen around the league a lot of guys who are captains aren't the rah-rah guys. There are guys who lead by example, and I think that's what Sasha Barkov does. I think he just sure would like a few more goals in the comm. I think he's only got one this season, but the way he plays a really good 200-foot game, one of the top defensive forwards in the NHL. I think it's going to come. He's been getting his chances. He just hasn't been able to bury it. So I think he'll get going sooner than later.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you say he's kind of struggling to find the back of the net, because over here in Winnipeg, our Finnish superstar, Patrick Laine, also having some trouble finding the back of the net. So it's just kind of interesting hearing both of them go through this at the same time. Do you think maybe the pressure of this trip and showcasing Finnish hockey to the fans over there, do you think maybe it's weighing on both of them?
It very well could. And now I don't know, what kind of stuff Patrick's been going through off the ice as far as, the media concerns and all that. But
heavy.
Same with Barkov. It's been every day he's been inundated with media requests from, national media, international media, and local. So, this is kind of stuff that's maybe new to Barkov. I'm sure Patrick is kind of used to it, but Barkov certainly isn't. Not doing it every day for 2 weeks. So maybe that does have something to do with it. And I think maybe once these guys get these games out of the way, they can go back to normal.
George Richards is our guest on NHL This Week. George covers the Florida Panthers for TheAthletic.com. George, you're not going to be very successful in the NHL when you're giving up almost 4 goals a game, and that's what the Panthers are just under that. That's what they're averaging. How does the goaltending turn around short of Roberto Luongo returning to the lineup?
Well, I think that James Reimer has played pretty well the last 2+ games that he's been in. He struggled earlier in the year after coming in to replace Roberto Luongo, replaced by Mike Hutchinson, who played okay and then struggled against the Rangers and was pulled. And James Reimer played a very good game in relief, and then again against the Islanders got the win. And I thought he was fine against the New Jersey Devils, probably gave up only 2 legit goals. The goaltending wasn't that fault of that loss. So, they're hoping that James Reimer can get back into the spot that he's been in, I think, last year in the second half of the season when Lou was hurt. James Reimer really played well for them, and I think they need him to kind of get back to that. Because, who knows how long Lou is still out. I mean, he's on the ice now, but he's 39 years old, so he's probably, maybe a week or two away. So they're going to have to count on James Reimer and Michael Hutchinson to kind of carry things a little bit longer. And I think they have the faith that Reimer can do it. Now, the stats don't show it, because you look at those stats. I mean, both guys are under 90% save. They're both giving up 3 and change. So, it hasn't been good goaltending for the most part, but I think it has improved lately.
George, sticking with the injuries, Mark Pisick is a guy who's missed the last 4 games with that upper body injury. Florida Panthers head coach Bob Bugner said earlier this week that we're not going to know until tomorrow if Pisick's going to play. But how bad do the Panthers need him for that D-depth going up against a team that's so stacked with offensive weapons like the Jets?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Mark doesn't play. Maybe not tomorrow, but then Friday. So I think he'll get in. I thought he was ready to go Saturday in New Jersey, but he had only practiced once, and I think they held him out for precautionary reasons. And I think they like their new look top 4 defensively. So if you're going to put Mark back in there, he probably slides in on a 5-6 role, which, isn't optimum. So, there is a question about his health, keep him out. I think absolutely. I mean, he's a solid top 4 D-man. Anytime you have one of those guys out, I mean, he's a good puck mover. He can bring a little bit of offense. So if they can get him back in, that'll help.
Yeah, and it's just sticking on the back end. So much is made about Aaron Ekblad when he broke into the league and how incredible he was. And then he obviously starts this year in the preseason making headlines for the wrong reasons after taking that punch. How's he looked early in the season?
Aaron Ekblad has been fine. I mean, I think he's, I think there's a lot of pressure on him. I mean, obviously the top pick of the draft, and he had the, you know, few first, you know, pretty good years. Kind of tailed off a little bit last year. I think maybe, you know, you talk about big contracts. Florida gave him an 8-year deal. You know, he's trying to live up to that a little bit. But no, I think Aaron Ekblad's been fine. He's now, you know, once they split him and Keith Yandle up, they were the top two. You know, now he's with a. You know, he's still, you know, he's still considered, you know, their top guy, and I think he's been fine. He's playing pretty well in the corners. He's moving the puck pretty well. We haven't seen a whole lot of offense out there in Ekblad, and I think that's a little surprising because he's a guy that can really get the puck to the net in a hurry. We haven't seen him take a whole lot of shots, so I think once he gets shooting, you'll start seeing some numbers go up for him.
Last question for you, George. George Richards from TheAthletic.com, our guest. He covers the Florida Panthers. Second full season behind the bench for Bob Bugner since he came over from previously being an assistant in San Jose. What have you noticed, if anything at all, that's different about him between year one and year two?
Well, I wasn't here last year,
right,
so I was covering the Blue Jackets. But from all accounts, you know, I think anytime you have a first-year head coach, there are going to be growing pains. And I think he put in a new system here in Florida. Team got off to a really bad start, and I think they started to turn things around at about the All-Star break. And I think there was some thought that they were going to be okay. You know, you weren't going to have those early season struggles this year, and they've had them. You know, so it's kind of a surprise that you would see a team. You would think in year two, you know, they kind of know what they're doing. They kind of know what's expected of them. I think Bob does a good job. I think he's still trying to find his way with this team. I think he's as confused by what's going on as anybody else. I mean, because this is a talented team. They've only got 2 wins in their first 9. And I think, you know, he and his staff are just trying to figure out what's going on, because you look on paper, I mean, this team is extremely talented. You look at the power play, it looks to be lethal, and it does nothing. So it's just been one of those weird starts for the Panthers, and they desperately need to get something going.
George Richards covers the Florida Panthers for TheAthletic.com. George, is there any truth that Miami's known as Helsinki of the South?
That's exactly what I have a T-shirt that says that, the Helsinki of the South. It's got the, you know, picturesque mountains and all that good stuff. So yeah.
There you go. Appreciate you going along with that joke, at least.
It's a little chilly right now. It's 78.
Oh, boy. Better bundle up. We'll let you get back to the trick-or-treating, George. Enjoy the chocolate bars. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Good talking to you. See you later.
Likewise, George. When we come back, we're going to discuss the latest controversy surrounding Josh Hosang of the New York Islanders. Is it time for that marriage just to end? You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I know that everybody brought their intensity, and everybody brought, you know, their best efforts, and seeing that from your teammates and seeing what they bring in and night out is the biggest thing, and you know, I was proud to play with all these guys.
That's New York Islanders forward Josh Hosang. I believe that's from a couple of years ago, in fact, speaking about his time when he played up at the NHL level. Hasn't been a regular at the NHL since then, and really another year, another controversy surrounding Josh Hosang and some of his comments critical of the Islanders organization. He was back at it earlier this week when he said that he felt he wasn't given a real chance to make the Islanders out of training camp. Here's the full quote. "I feel like they had their minds made up on what was going to happen and what the team was going to look like. It's okay. They had the whole summer to plan that. I don't know if you watched any of the games, that being the preseason games, but I didn't play a lot. It's okay. It is what it is." Everyone's favorite quote that means absolutely nothing. More on Hosang, where he just isn't happy with his standing with the Islanders organization. Ezzy, is it time for the Islanders to look to maybe sever this relationship? This is the guy they drafted. He had all the talent to be a very high draft pick. He was labeled with.
He was a high draft pick.
Well, I know, but even
a first
higher.
Rounder.
Even higher.
No, you're right. You're right. And we were there in Philadelphia.
That's right. And there was talk that he had the talent to be in the first 15, and he dropped until the bottom of the first round because he'd been labeled as having attitude problems.
Right. And I remember, you know, it's a good memory, Drew, because that's, you know, almost 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And You know, Hosang.
Don't remember
you,
what I did yesterday.
Well, that's what happens when you have kids. But if you guys remember, I mean, there was the whole controversy with Team Canada, right? Josh Hosang didn't think he was being given enough opportunity to stick with Team Canada and play in the World Junior Tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he went late in that first round. I think it was three spots before Brendan Lemieux and then just three spots after David Pasternak. It actually turned out to be a pretty good draft there late in that first round. And, you know, Josh Hosang, you don't hear players say this a lot, guys. And we know that he did not have a good relationship, Shawnee, with Garth Snow. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all remember what happened a couple of years back at training camp.
And not a great one with Doug Waite, who was the then Isles head coach.
Right.
Snow was the then general manager.
Right, Drew. So he fell out of favor with the Waite-Snow regime. So then Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz come in, and Josh Hosang in training camp is thinking, well, you know, I've got a good shot here. And in this article, it was Brett Sergalis of the New York Post that wrote the article. And, you know, you see a guy like Leo Komarov come in, and you're thinking, well, you know, if I had an opportunity in the bottom six, that's gone now that the Islanders have signed Leo Komarov. But the point is, you know, Josh Hosang is only 22 years old, and there are a lot of players, and this goes back, you know, decades, a lot of players that don't crack into the NHL until they're 23 or 24 years old. So just because he's a late first-round pick and he's 22 and he's in the American Hockey League, the thing that bothers me is that Josh Hosang is complaining about the ice time that he's getting in the American Hockey League. And Steve Bernier is one of the players that's been pointed out with the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. That's the AHL affiliate of the New York Islanders. Steve Bernier is a guy that obviously, you know, his NHL days are behind him. So people are saying, well, you know, Josh Hosang, he should be given those primetime minutes, not a guy like Steve Bernier who's in his early 30s. So, I mean, I think right now Hosang's attitude is the problem.
Hosang's got 4 assists in 9 games in the AHL so far this year. And it's worth noting his NHL numbers when he's played in the NHL. He played 21 games for the Islanders back in 16-17, and he put up 10 points. 4 goals, 6 assists. So about half a point a game, which isn't anything to sneeze at. If you're putting up half a point a game at the NHL level, and
especially as a young player.
As a young player, that means you're an NHL-caliber player. The next year, 2017-18, he played the majority of the year in Bridgeport again, but he got some games in the NHL level, and again, 22 games played, 2 goals, 10 assists, 12 points in 22 NHL games. So when he's played at the NHL level, he has shown that he has the skills and the talent and has produced at an NHL caliber level.
Right, but, you know, Shawnee, I want to get Shawnee in here, but, you know, when you're talking about this Islanders team, first of all, I want to get into that when we do the I'm Surprised segment in a couple of segments from now at 8:15. But this Islanders team has been very surprising. Right now, you've got Andrew Ladd, Valtteri Filppula, and Leo Komarov on that third line. The fourth line, we know, has been together for a long time. You've got Cal Clutterbuck, Casey Cizikas, and then Matt Martin is back in New York. He was with Toronto, of course, prior to coming back to New York, right? So where is Josh Hosang playing on this team? I mean, Andrew Ladd, he's making the big bucks. Valtteri Filppula, he was signed as a free agent. Leo Komarov, also signed as a free agent. I mean, he's going to have to wait his turn. There are other players ahead of him. I mean, I think there's a lot of similarities to Nick Petan and Josh Hosang. I'm not saying that they're the same type of player. They're different types of players, both highly skilled.
Yeah.
But the reality is, you know, Nick, and obviously, you know, it's a tragedy what happened with Nick Petan. We should mention that. So, I mean, you know, Nick Petan, obviously, he hasn't gotten, you know, a fair start to the season, because I think, you know, Nick Petan has a good chance at playing for the Jets at some point this year. So when you're talking about Josh Hosang right now, it's just a question of there's guys that are higher than him on the depth chart, and he's got to wait his time. And I should mention, you know, I'm not, you know, saying that I don't like him as a hockey player, because he's got big time skill. I actually like his swagger. I just think that his attitude, the way he goes about it, you know, he shouldn't be saying this type of stuff in the media. It's just going to come back to bite him.
He probably shouldn't be saying it in the media. Your point about Nick Petan is an interesting one. The only difference I'm going to point out, though, is
similar ages.
Josh Hosang has produced at the NHL level to the half a point a game on average. Nick Petan hasn't reached that caliber. So Hosang, I think, does have an argument that he says, look, what more do I have to prove at the AHL level? I'm an NHL caliber player. I think it's time that I get that opportunity.
And who knows? Maybe he speaks of this lack of ice time in the preseason, but maybe he came into preseason game one and Brass of the New York Islanders had a list of things he needed to work on or things that he cannot do in game anymore, and they see something right off the bat that just shows that there's been zero progression mentally, And they figure this is a me guy. He doesn't care about the we part. Like, just reading this story about how he showed up to the rink in an immaculately tailored suit this past Saturday to kick the ball around before the game with his teammates. And they said, sorry, Josh, go change into a tracksuit. And he said, no. Like, it just shows you, like, what is it going through this kid's mind? Like, you got to be a team player if you want to make it in the NHL and you want to be a professional athlete. I just quickly, yeah, I look at a guy.
Nothing is handed to you, right, Shawnee?
I look at a guy like Curtis Lazar, a guy who, very similarly, highly touted prospect. He was a Canadian captain for the junior club. Goes in the NHL, can't really find his game. He gets sent down. I believe it was in Calgary sent him down this year.
Yeah.
And he came out and he says, I got to work my butt off to get back to where I need to be as an NHLer, as a regular in this league, to be the best hockey player I can. That shows the dedication that you'd want out of Seattle Hosang. Not this we versus me versus I should be. Sorry, bud. Do your work and maybe you'll earn a roster spot.
It'll be an interesting situation to see if this is the straw that breaks the camel's back when it comes to the relationship between Josh Hosang and the New York Islanders. When we come back, our good friend Stephen Wino of the Associated Press is going to join us. You're listening to NHL This Week, hour number two up next on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN Radio 1290. It's brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com. Or check out the showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program the number one Jacksonville Jaguars fan that also covers the NHL for the Associated Press. It's our good friend, Stephen Wino. Stephen, good evening, and thanks for joining us. Stephen, are you there? Nope.
I'm here. I think I'm the only Jacksonville Jaguars fan who covers the NHL.
Yeah, that, well, you know, I wouldn't go that far. I can't say anything with certainty.
Stephen, I was worried that you just had, you know, put the phone down and started eating some candy. I didn't know what was going on there.
No, just drowning my sorrows after that Jaguars loss in London. I saw him first the other day.
Yeah, you went to that game, so you really truly are a diehard Jaguars fan. Do you ever watch The Good Place, the TV show, Stephen?
Yeah, I just got into it. Just started binge watching it probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and enjoy everything about it.
Right, and there's the character on The Good Place who's first also a Jacksonville Jaguars fanatic. So, you know, obviously you have some. Maybe you were the inspiration for that character. I'm not certain or not.
Oh, that would be a very dangerous precedent.
Stephen, obviously we brought you on to talk about the NHL. You know, we're sort of, you know, 10, 12 games through the season so far. The team you cover most closely is, of course, the Washington Capitals. You know, they're off to a decent start to the year, 5-3-2, as they shake off their hangover from the Stanley Cup celebration. You know, what's the mood around the team so far about their start to the year?
Pretty decent, really. I mean, they've had the Tom Wilson suspension certainly kind of hanging over everybody, and a rotation of guys that Todd Reardon's had to put on right wing with Evgeny Kuznetsov and Alex Ovechkin, and that's taken up some time. Brooks Orpik out with an injury right now that in theory is day-to-day, but this is a team that, given the celebrations and given what we always talk about a Stanley Cup hangover, it's kind of navigated it pretty well, and it's going to be fascinating over the next maybe week and a half or so. They got a lot of home games, and then see if there's any kind of lull with this team, because the talent on paper is still there. It's arguably as good a team, if not a better team, than the one that won the Stanley Cup. But the Eastern Conference, a lot of teams have gotten better, and the Capitals have stayed almost the same from last year, and it's going to be a test over the next few weeks if some of that adrenaline from the Stanley Cup wears off.
Steven, you reported this earlier today. Kings goalie Jonathan Quick is going to be out indefinitely after surgery to repair a torn meniscus. And, you know, we know that the Kings are off to a horrible start, only 3 wins in their first 11 games. What does this do to change what Rob Blake may or may not do, you know, with some of those veteran players? Because, as I mentioned, I mean, they're off to just a horrible start.
Yeah, it's brutal. And I spoke with Rob when Jonathan Quick went down the first time. And he said he was really confident in Jack Campbell and Peter Budaj at that time, that it was not going to be a long-term absence for Jonathan Quick, even if this is in a 3 to 6 week time frame. it's a lot of pressure on those guys if Rob Blake doesn't go out and get a goaltender. There are a few extras out there, potentially Peter Mrazek or Carlos McElhinney in Carolina, whether it's Michael Neuwirth or Calvin Pickard in Philadelphia, Eddie Lack potentially available from New Jersey. I think there's some options out there if Rob Blake wants to get some, at least an insurance policy there for Jonathan Quick for the rest of the season. But unless Andre Kopitar starts producing better, unless the rest of that team starts playing up to par, you're going to need a goaltender to stand on his head to win for this team right now. And I don't think Rob Blake or is going to push any panic buttons when it comes to John Stevens as coach or any kind of big moves. But it'll be interesting to see if he actually makes some sort of minor move to at least shake up the team, because the way things are going right now, unless Jack Campbell all of a sudden turns into the same goaltender who won the World Junior for the United States a few years ago, this is not going to go well for the LA Kings over the next month or so.
Steven, you're based out of Washington, so I felt I should ask you, were you surprised at all by the NHL to uphold Tom Wilson's suspension, and are you surprised that he's appealing the ruling?
Oh, no, none of this has been surprising, really. I mean, the 20 games was heavy from the start, but I was not shocked at all that Gary Bettman upheld those 20 games, and not shocked at all that Tom Wilson's going to a neutral arbitrator, because that's kind of the way this was going to go. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if this gets reduced to 15 or 16 or 18 games along the way, because there's not really a precedent for this. For someone who's a repeat offender, for having three or four of these almost identical hits over the span of 13 months and having no suspension record before that, that to go 20 games, I think a lot of people around hockey understood why it went to that length. But a lot of people around the Capitals thinking this was going to be a 10-game suspension. I think they would have been okay with that. But you can go to a neutral arbitrator who has reduced Austin Watson's domestic violence suspension already and think there's a possibility this does get knocked down from 20 games.
Steven Wino is our guest on NHL This Week. Steven covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Steven, putting on your prognostication hat, come, you know, let's say the trade deadline, after the trade deadline, Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky are or are not members of the Columbus Blue Jackets?
Are not. And I think, sadly, for Jarmo Kekalainen and Columbus, you probably have seen this coming since maybe June. I remember being at the draft with Kekalainen and the Blue Jackets, and there being doubt then about both of those guys, that Bobrovsky, I think even more than Panarin, that this is an issue, that maybe Bobrovsky and the team from the previous contract negotiation aren't on great terms. Artemi Panarin and his representative already made it clear they don't want to sign long term. And I think this team, this franchise, can't afford to lose these guys for nothing. Even if Columbus is in the playoff race, I think Jarmo is going to be challenged to make what we like to call a hockey trade and try to get something back for an NHL roster. And if they fall out of it, have to sell as high as possible on these guys. And not a good start for Sergei Bobrovsky right now in a contract year and a potential trade year that for the Blue Jackets to try to get something for him. You're going to be able to get something, but for a rental on a goaltender who's a UFA, for a rental on a player like Artemi Panarin, who he has been producing already through 15 points, I think, through 10 games, that's going to be the challenge. And I think at this point, Jarmo's got to start looking for a deal in the next couple of months, because if you don't think you're going to be able to get these guys signed, you don't want to be pushed to the limit at 3 o'clock in late February.
You know, Steven, sticking with the Columbus Blue Jackets, I know we've talked about it a lot on the Saturday show, and we've talked about it on the Wednesday show as well. What do you make of John Tortorella's comments as of late? Obviously, you know, he makes the comments that there's not enough hate in today's NHL. Then it seemed like after that last loss, 5-3 to the Detroit Red Wings, that was just last night, of course, but it seemed like John Tortorella was almost speechless and frustrated with this group. And, you know, obviously, you know, I don't think his job is in danger right now, but what do you make of, you know, the way John Tortorella has been addressing the media lately?
Well, I think that whole idea of John Tortorella mellowing out is over. That this is we knew what John Tortorella was in Tampa and in New York. That we kind of had an idea of, and even in Vancouver, really, his kind of outspoken personality. It hasn't gone away. I mean, this is who he is, and just because he's in a smaller market in Columbus doesn't mean he's changed his stripes at all. And I do think that a coach like that, and Peter Laviolette's kind of like this, that a coach like that wears on players after a while and wears on a team to where the effectiveness is really high at the start and then starts to wear down over time. And it might be the other way. I mean, maybe John Tortorella, after coaching this team for as long as he has, it's starting to wear on him. And And this has been a team that's dealt with injuries before he got there, and inconsistency, and blowing a playoff lead, a 2-0 series lead to the eventual champion Capitals last year. It's been a rough ride for John Tortorella and the Blue Jackets. And I agree with you. I don't know that his job is necessarily in danger right now. But if you're looking at this season as a referendum on John Tortorella as a coach, this is where, from a Blue Jackets organizational standpoint, and it starts, I guess, with John Davidson, that you have to say, is he the guy we want as our coach long-term? Because if this team is going to now go into sort of a rebuilding stage with a young goaltender, without Artemi Panarin, maybe John Tortorella is not the coach to be that kind of rebuilding style coach.
Steven, with the Jets and Panthers playing in Helsinki tomorrow and Friday, so much talk over here about the NHL Global Series and teams going overseas and playing a couple games there. I'm curious just your general thoughts on the NHL sending teams over yearly to play overseas and to kind of spread the game. You know, do you think it's good for the league, bad for the players? What are your general thoughts on the Global Series?
Well, I think it's great, and really this is also a personal thing. Just having come back from seeing an NFL game at Wembley, it's a terrific idea. I mean, at that game, the Jaguars and Eagles are playing, and there are jerseys of all 32 NFL teams in that building for that, because everybody who's a fan of the NFL wants to see the product up close. And this is, Scandinavia is a great place for this, because there are so many fans already in Sweden and Finland who are NHL fans over the past decade, two decades, that they yearn for any chance to see the NHL up close. And I think the NHL will and should continue to do these style of games. What I talked to a bunch of guys, writing about this later in the week, from Denmark, Sweden, and Finland, that more than just taking the NHL over there, I think the NHL's got to look at a lot more Saturday and Sunday afternoon games in the Eastern and Central time zones, to where more fans over there can watch without waking up in the middle of the night or staying up late to watch games. Because if you want to make real strides in getting fans and building a fan base over there, I don't think it's enough to play one or two games a year in places like Stockholm and Helsinki, Gothenburg. I think Malmo might be next in Sweden. That I think the next move is try to play more of those afternoon games and cater to those audiences over there to try to build that up long term.
Very interesting there, Steven. Steven Wino, our guest from the Associated Press. Steven, last question for you. You wrote about this last week, about the goaltending equipment and how goalies are complaining about some of the equipment is leaving them bruised because it doesn't protect enough. Really, who's at fault here? Is this an issue of the NHL? Is this an issue of the NHL goaltenders union, you know, quote-unquote? Or is this an issue of the equipment managers? Who's to blame really here?
I think the general managers, actually. This is where I do think the GMs have had the right idea all along in the league wanting to create more offense. This might have been a step too far. This might have been we were trying to make goalies smaller, and they've taken the pad sizes down, they've taken the pant sizes down, that this might have been the one thing where it's going to be dangerous and might have to be looked at the GM's meeting in March in Florida to say, we do want goalies to be smaller, but let's look at this again. And I think Kay Whitmore has done a great job in trying to help manufacturers and the goalies and everybody figure this out. But I wonder if after this much amount of time, Corey Schneider, who's the ranking goalie on the competition committee, might have to go back and say, the constituency is not going to work. This is not going to work to have goalies getting hurt or fearing getting hurt with these tighter, more form-fitting chest protectors. That it's, the manufacturers are also a little bit to blame just because they wait so long to make these new things. But there's been along the way, whether it's the pads or the pants, that it's been an adjustment period where guys have been able to try them out during a season before they're actually put in. This time, guys didn't really get them until the middle of the summer last year, didn't have a whole lot of time to adjust a lot of this equipment. So I think there's a lot of blame to lay along the way, but the general managers are the ones who made the decision last March to go to these and are going to have the decision to make again this spring whether to stay with this over the next few years.
Sorry, I lied, Stephen. One more question then. If the issue isn't about if the NHL wants the goalies to be smaller, and we know goalies now are all over 6 feet tall almost on the regular, some, you know, 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", should they maybe be looking at enlarging the net rather than reducing the size of the equipment?
That's what Mike Babcock keeps saying. He's like, make the net bigger. You want more goals, make it bigger. But look, I'm not a proponent of that yet. I think goals are already going up, even though the goalie equipment, I don't think is really the reason. I think more the idea is guys are more skilled defenses aren't that good. Maybe we need to stop some of these coaching techniques. But I don't know if that's going to be that's probably the nuclear option. Probably when we think about, hey, do we really want 7-6 games? Okay, that's fine. If that's what we want and sort of lacrosse style scoring, that's going to be something that I'm sure within the next 5 or 10 years is going to be discussed.
Stephen Wino from the Associated Press. He covers the NHL. Stephen, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Stephen. When we come back, Sean and Ezzy have some things that they're surprised about. They'll tell you about it next. The I'm Surprised segment up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Happy Halloween for all those trick and treaters, ghouls and goblins who are joining us on this Wednesday evening.
Where is all the candy?
Well, I suspect we're going to have a lot of candy for Saturday's show.
You know, I didn't expect Chris Curry to bring any candy in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad enough that he has to hang out with us.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, you
Chris
know, Sean
Curry, our
or,
producer.
Or you could have brought something.
You didn't bring anything. You brought yourself a coffee.
I'm trying to lose weight.
Oh, okay. Well, then
I mean, Naomi's got me eating, you know, carrot sticks and celery sticks.
That's why you want us bringing the candy. Yeah.
Naomi told us, don't bring him any candy. Anyways, this segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli. No candy there, but you can get the Illegal Curve sandwich, and that's a damn good sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, you can get Bernstein's delivered right to your door. Citywide delivery. Order online at shopbernsteins.com.
I'm shocked.
Hey, I'm surprised.
Surprise.
To be honest with you, I'm surprised.
I'm surprised, our new segment that we debuted a couple weeks ago. Things that are surprising Sean and Ezzy so far in this NHL season. Sean, I'm going to start with you.
Bring it.
The Arizona Coyotes' recent surge has you surprised.
Big time. Saw a couple stats that caught my eye this morning, and to say I was surprised was...
You had to pick your jaw up off the ground? Level of surprise?
Quite.
Wow.
Very, very accurate.
Ah.
Arizona Coyotes, winners of 4 games in a row. They've outscored their opponents 20-4 in that span. They've allowed 21 goals this season. That is the fewest in the league. And they have 2 more games left on that current homestand and can improve on said stats. Those are all the most surprising when you consider where we thought the Arizona Coyotes would be, where we talked about the Arizona Coyotes the last time we did this segment. I believe they hadn't scored a 5-on-5 goal at the time, and apparently they seem to turn it around.
And, Shawnee, is it any coincidence that Alex Galchenyuk has been back for all of those 4 games?
I would say it is a coincidence.
You would say it is a coincidence.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting to note, following up on your surprise about the Arizona Coyotes, only 2 teams in the Pacific have a positive goal differential, the division-leading San Jose Sharks and the Arizona Coyotes. Everybody else in the Pacific in red numbers in terms of goal differential. So the Calgary Flames, of course, they're severely hindered on that. They're a -1. They lost 9-1 to the Penguins or whatever score that was a couple games ago. That's really affecting them. But the Coyotes in the positive green numbers with a +10 goal differential. Ezzy, you are surprised at how well Chicago Blackhawks rookie defenseman Henry Jokiharju is playing with Duncan Keith.
Yeah, close.
Did I get the name right?
It was close, Drew. Jokiharju.
Jokiharju.
You know, this is a guy, I was at the draft in Chicago with Huss. We were broadcasting live. He was taken, I think it was 5 picks after Christian Vesalainen at 24th. He was 29th overall. And, you know, there were other Finnish defensemen that were taken ahead of him. Juuso Välimäki, I remember, was taken about 10 spots ahead of him by the Calgary Flames. And, you know, this is a guy, and I haven't watched the Chicago Blackhawks a lot. And, you know, if you want to read a really good article on Henry Jokiharju, Mark Lazarus of the Athletic Chicago, he used to be with the Chicago Sun-Times, he wrote about Jokiharju today. He's playing 21 minutes per night. And he's tied for the team lead in points. He doesn't have a goal yet. Assists. He's got 7 assists in, I think it's 10 games. And when you're talking about this guy, I mean, he's a prospect who they thought maybe a couple of years from now, they thought maybe he'll make the team and maybe we'll give him a look and then we'll maybe send him down to the American Hockey League. He had a really good year last year with the Portland Winterhawks. But the point is, I'm so surprised that not only is he playing on the top pair, he's absolutely flourishing on that top line. And if you talk to Joel Quenneville or Duncan Keith, they just rave about this guy. So he's 19 years old. I don't think he's going to win the Calder Trophy. I honestly think that Elias Pettersson's probably already locked that up, especially if he stays healthy the whole year. But when you're talking about Joki Haru, I mean, 19 years old, 21 minutes a game, you know, he's playing great. And when you consider, Drew, that the Hawks, as you know, drafted Adam Boqvist high last year in the 2018 draft, you look at that defense going forward with Boqvist and Joki Haru. I mean, they're set up because that's been the Achilles heel of the Hawks. The Hawks are doing pretty well this year. What are they, 6-3-2 or something like that? They're off to a good start.
6-3-3.
There you go. So yeah. Joki Haru is a big part of that.
They're going to be without Patrick Kane tonight. That was just came out over the wire a second ago. They're in Vancouver to play the Canucks, the surprising Canucks. But without Patrick Kane, the Blackhawks will be.
Yeah, and just quickly, Ezzy, I completely agree. I watched a bit of the Edmonton-Chicago game Sunday and was just blown away by this guy. His composure, he runs a power play unit. Yep. He makes crisp passes on tape. There's not very much hesitation in his game, especially for a young D-man. Super impressed.
Sean, you are surprised at Connor McDavid's heavy ice time. The best player in the league, obviously, right now, but his ice time is still surprising you.
Listen, when you are averaging close to mid-20 minutes the last four or five games, I mean, you are playing with fire if you are throwing Connor McDavid out there for that long. And I know Todd McClellan said that, you know, he, because of the way he skates and his conditioning, he can extend shifts and he can succeed when he's in that 50 to a minute 15 seconds of a shift. So he's not like any other player that he can still drive. But, I mean, you are putting so much weight on this kid's shoulders with regards to your team's success. And if he goes down, he's already had a shoulder issue. If he goes down, what do you do? How do you fill those minutes? We've seen it on a back end where you have defensemen that can try to plug those big minutes. But as a forward, that is asking a lot from an Edmonton Oilers club that isn't that deep.
The last five games for Connor McDavid, 22-16, 22-51, 21-10, 21-15, and an absolute jaw-dropping 28-26. Those are numbers that top-flight defensemen sometimes don't even put up.
Struggle to play at their highest level when they hit those minutes. And this is a top-line centerman who's tasked with offensive production and defensive awareness.
Yeah, it goes to show you how thin the Oilers are. They're actually playing good hockey as of late, the Oilers. 6-4-1.
Good road trip.
They had a very good road trip. They actually played very good hockey since they came back to beat the Jets.
That was a big win over Nashville.
Yeah, they lost last night. They won both games against Nashville, the back-to-back. Yep. They lost last night to Minnesota, but 6-4-1 gets them a little bit of breathing room after it was a slow start for the Oilers. Mr. Ginsburg, you're surprised. You're going to have to expand on this one. You're surprised that the Philadelphia Flyers only allowed two goals last night to the Anaheim Ducks.
I'm very surprised, please. And it's because the Flyers are tied for first in the NHL in goals allowed. They're allowing four goals a game. That's not good. A good first, by the way. That's a bad first.
Yeah, so they're 31st overall.
That means that they're the worst defensive team in the league. Going into the game, their goals against was 4.2 a game. Last year, the Philadelphia Flyers were middle of the pack. I went back and looked at this. They were middle of the pack, 14th in the NHL, close to middle of the pack, that's close enough, 2.88 goals against a game. And this is what is the most surprising to me. Andrew McDonald, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but he's been a healthy scratch for four of the, I guess they've played 11 games now, 12 games. So he's been a healthy scratch. Travis Sanheim,
12 games,
there you go. Travis Sanheim of Manitoba has actually been one of the most consistent defensemen. Mm-hmm. Ivan Provorov and Shane Gostisbehere have had their struggles. And I'm not talking about offensively. I'm talking about defensively. The goaltending has been a huge issue. Michael Neuwirth just came back from his injury.
Yeah.
He allows six goals in his first game back. Brian Elliott has an .889 save percentage. Calvin Pickard obviously was acquired there because they needed a backup while Michael Neuwirth was injured.
Yeah, off waivers from the Leafs.
.833 save percentage. Six of the Flyers' seven losses have come by at least three goals.
It's usually not a recipe.
So I am very surprised that they only allowed two goals to the Ducks, even though the Ducks right now are bottom five in the league in goals for. The Flyers are a complete mess right now defensively.
Last one for you, Mr. Assor. You are surprised at the problems or the handling of Oilers winger Jesse Puljujarvi.
Yeah, I mean, just every time we watch this guy and we watch the Oilers play the Jets, he doesn't look that bad. I mean, he's usually productive against the Jets. He'll chip in with a point or he'll pass the puck, set up a goal or something. But you just constantly hear out of Edmonton that the guy isn't getting it, and he, you know, relegated to the fourth line, and now I believe it's four straight in the press box, and I'm just surprised that he hasn't been able to pick it up, and just even to the point where he can get himself regular minutes. I mean, he's a big body. He's a decently good skater. I mean, for a guy with that much skill, it's a little surprising that he can't put it all together.
Ezzy, last one, and we're going to bring in Dave Jamieson from our sister station, TSN 1260, next segment to talk more about the Oilers. Ezzy, you were surprised at how good the New York Islanders' goaltending has been through the first 13 games. The Islanders, surprisingly, right at the top of the Metropolitan Division, 6-4-1, a point behind the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Very surprised, and I don't know if you guys caught any of that game last night between the Islanders and the Penguins, but that was a huge victory for the Islanders. Mm-hmm. Robin Lehner actually left the game. Thomas Greiss had to come in. So Robin Lehner right now is listed as day-to-day. And I, you know, prepared this before he got injured, by the way. So kind of unfortunate. But you look at Robin Lehner's numbers last year with the Sabres, guys. 3.01 goals against and a .908 save percentage. Now, the Sabres were a terrible team last year, right? That's the reason why they got the first overall pick, yes, or at least gave themselves the opportunity to win the lottery. This year, Robin Lehner, his record, 4-2-0-1, 2.45 goals against average, and a .928 save percentage. And what's most impressive, Drew, because I know you like those advanced stats, he's got the best best high danger save percentage in the entire league for goalies that have played at least 200 minutes, 93.94.
It's a really nice story for Robin Lehner this year, especially coming off, you know, him coming public with his struggles with bipolar disorder, mm-hmm, and his struggles with depression and his struggles where he was self-medicating.
It's hard to say this. Sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, he's an early season Vezina candidate right now.
This is the Robin Lehner that people thought they were going to see in Ottawa. You know, remember, he was the goaltender of the future for, yep, the Senators, mm-hmm, and then he, mm-hmm, got traded to Buffalo, and he was the goaltender of the future in Buffalo. And obviously, he was struggling with his mental health at that point in time. It seems like he's got that under control at this point, and the results are showing it on the ice.
Thomas Greiss, by the way, has also been excellent. .933 save percentage.
That is surprising. But quickly, just real fast, while we're just talking about the Islanders, it just kind of popped in my head. Is anyone else surprised that Matt Barzal got up after getting destroyed by Ivan Provorov?
It was a pretty good hit by, ooh, Provorov. I am a little surprised that Barzal bounced back as quickly as he did. Dave Jamieson from our sister station, TSN 1260, joins us next on the program. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Producer Chris Curry doing the great job behind the board. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. All this week at Rumors, coming off of the incredible weekend that was last week with Norm Macdonald, where he performed to 8 straight sold-out shows. Hilarious comedian Mark Normand in town at Rumors. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From our sister station in Edmonton, TSN 1260, he's the host of the Dave Jamieson Show. Dave Jamieson joins us now. Dave, happy Halloween to you.
And back at you, and thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Dave. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Oilers playing some decent hockey as of late.
I thought we were going to ask Dave what his favorite chocolate bar is for Halloween.
Well, you just interrupted me, so I guess we can ask Dave that.
Well, I got to go back a long way to when I was trick-or-treating. I think they probably handed out rocks. I'm that old. You know what? A good coffee crisp or, yep, you know, one of those, like a go-to. If you hit me with a big Turk, I might enjoy that, but not too many. But, you know, I go easy. Again, at my age, I kind of watch that stuff.
That's very responsible of you, Dave, and we'll have your share if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Okay. Anyways, as I was saying before my colleague rudely interrupted me, is that the Oilers have been playing some good hockey as of late, obviously dropping a hard defeat last night to the Minnesota Wild. But prior to that, going back to that comeback here in Winnipeg where they came back to win against the Jets, you know, the Oilers all of a sudden looking like a team that might be more competitive than they had looked early on to start the year.
Well, and that's absolutely correct. It's a fragile team, and you learn, and I say fragile, don't misconstrue that as, oh, they're not very good, or that they're, you know, look, they're relearning how to win hockey games. And if this is a team largely unchanged from last year, I mean, Alex Chiasson is new and Kyle Brodziak has returned to the organization and a couple of other pieces there that, you know, but substantially the same team that had a absolutely deplorable season last year with the exception of Connor McDavid. So this is a team that started the year playing in Sweden against New Jersey. And this first month, the month of October, which, you know, we're just wrapping up today, was a killer. And in terms of not just the travel, but the opponents, because while Oilers fans may not want to hear this, there are no easy games when you're the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, I do a show every day on TSN 1260, and people would say, well, you know, but the Rangers, that's an easy 2 points. And I keep having to remind people, no. The Oilers are at the bottom looking up. Like, don't have the, if I may, sort of the typical Canadian hockey smugness where, well, we're better than Arizona. Well, not by much, you know, not by much. Careful, but, you know, Edmonton, you know, there's a lot of work to be done here. And this is a team that last year was absolutely crushingly bad on special teams. They've been better. Last night was not a good night, and they paid for it dearly. Todd McLellan says, you want to know how this game was decided against Minnesota last night? They were better on teams. So, you know, this is, again, I come back to fragile. There may be a different way to describe it, but it is a team relearning how to win hockey games. And, you know, as you guys pointed out, that game in Winnipeg against a very good Jets team, you know, I think maybe gave people a reasonable shot of optimism to say, this looks more like a team as opposed to Connor McDavid and a bunch of other people in matching uniforms.
You know, Dave, you just mentioned the game last night, and, you know, obviously Cam Talbot got the start. Mikko Koskinen finally got a start. He got the win over the Nashville Predators, and, you know, Cam Talbot started the 8 previous games. And are you surprised that Mikko Koskinen has only played the 1 game, and do you expect to see him more here going forward in November?
Yes, to the latter part. Yeah, I would expect and probably hope that he's going to play more. He's paid handsomely to be a backup, and but, you know, they had to get Cam Talbot going again. I mean, he, like the whole Oiler team, I mean, he got better as last year went on, but by the time he did, the season was cooked. And the only thing that people were largely interested in is what is McDavid going to do on any given night. So I think Cam Talbot's game is back. Has he been lights out brilliant every night? No, but again, but go back to, you know, the team in front of him is not among the elite. Yet it may never be, but it's certainly not right now. However, they needed to get Cam Talbot settled and steady in goal, and they've achieved that. The other part, you know, Koskinen, he looked pretty good, and he didn't look very good at all. Certainly in his preseason debut, got better as it went as the preseason went along. But they're going to have to use him more. But Cam Talbot is not, you know, it's not unheard of now in this day and age. The goalies, you know, they're comfortable at around the 60-game mark. Some can push it a little further than that. That's probably, if they can get, I would suggest, 15, maybe 17 games at a Koskinen, they're going to be really pleased. And if they're good games, I mean, if he's just going to be a placeholder, he's going to have to be better than just the guy they go to when Talbot needs a night off.
Dave, one guy who the Jets acquired in the offseason and you know, Jets fans really didn't know much about was goaltender Lauren Brossoit, and he has come out of the gate here in Winnipeg absolutely stellar. He's 3-0 in his first 3 starts, a 168 goals against, a .957 save percentage. Did people in Edmonton did they see this out of him? Is it surprising to hear this level of success with Lauren?
Well, it's a funny thing. Well, it's a funny thing with all positions, but, you know, a goalie, right time, right place. He's a former Edmonton Oil King. I think people wanted him to you know, there was sort of an investment because, you know, local guy in the sense that we saw him from when he was a junior, and you wanted him to succeed. And look, I mean, outside of the season 2 years ago, this has not been a good environment for players of any position to learn their craft, get better, be surrounded by a successful program. And I think Laurent Bichois is probably just a victim, like, you know, there's any number of players who've gone through the Edmonton, I call it the factory, not a particularly successful factory most years, and he was a victim of that. And it's been, you know, they once they got Cam Talbot, they got that settled, and then, you know, they've been sort of fiddling around with Al Montoya, LB, you know, now to Koskinen. I think a lot of people are obviously thrilled for Laurent Bichois and hope that, you know, this continues. He's certainly in a good environment, a winning environment, with a very, very good team in front of him.
Dave Jamieson is our guest on NHL This Week. Dave is with our sister station at Edmonton, TSN 1260. We're talking about the Edmonton Oilers. Dave, I mean, Connor McDavid is clearly an alien. We all know that. It's clear from his performance. But yes. Even aliens got to get tired. And how can he keep up this time on ice? But at the same time, how can the Oilers cut back his time if he's really the driving force behind the team?
I don't know a lot about alien life forms, but all of that said, they can't cut back on it. I mean, that's the way it is, Connor, and he is seemingly, you know, last year there was about a 10 or a 15 game chunk where he was quite ill. I don't, you know the extent of it, sort of a viral thing that hung on. He continued to perform, but he was clearly not at his best. I mean, if he can stay healthy beyond, you know, injury, and that's obvious for any player, but I don't see why they would need to, be careful. They don't have to put him on a hockey version of the pitch count. They can just run him. The other player that they may want to – look, Oscar Klefbom, I think the stat still holds, was second behind Drew Doughty in terms of time on ice in the NHL, and he has really flourished with that time, and he has rediscovered his game and is playing like, and he and Adam Larson are playing like a true number one pairing. But, you know, to McDavid, look, we're running, or at least I am running out of superlatives to describe him. I mean, the goal last night, you know, bar down on a breakaway where he blows by Ryan Suter. I mean, come on. Like, there's stuff like that, and I hope Edmonton doesn't get blasé to it. I mean, we did have a guy named Gretzky. I think that became almost, you know, well, of course he got four goals tonight. I think people go to Rogers' place hoping, anticipating, and even starting to expect superlative something from Connor McDavid. Even if it may not pay off in a goal, but it's something you don't see other players, mere mortals, do. So, you know, like, what's the old term? You know, smoke it if you got it. And the Oilers have got it, and they're smoking it with Connor McDavid.
You know, Dave, you just talked about the Oilers' number one center, so we have to ask you about the Oilers' number two center, Leon Draisaitl. I have him in a hockey pool, so I know how hot he has been lately. 5 goals right. And 2 assists, 7 points in his last 5 games. I mean, Leon Draisaitl has been a consistent offensive producer for the Oilers for the last 3 seasons now, but are you seeing a player that knows he has to be more of an all-around player and give Connor McDavid even more support now that the Oilers are trying to get back into the playoffs?
Yes. The short answer to your question is yes. I mean, it's funny how, you know, and the stats are right there. He's always going to get his goals or assists or whatever, but where Leon Draisaitl leaves some people wanting is, you know, when the game is not going, he's not feeling it. The criticism is that he will kind of vanish, and it's hard for a guy that big and that talented to vanish. But he will not be able to impact the game in other ways beyond, you know, with assists and goals. I mean, he's a tremendous passer. I mean, I think he's Joe Thornton, you know, the German version of, in terms of his ability to find guys through, you know, a mass of sticks and just he's really got an incredible touch. But all of that said, the numbers will be there, and at the end of the year, I'm sure we're going to be talking. I hate predicting point totals, but he's always going to get his. But to your point, yeah, it's a real, I mean, he's handsomely compensated, and there are a lot of people that think, man, the Oilers overpaid him too early in his career. But, you know, the numbers will be there. And I think the rest of his game, I mean, God, he's still so young, it will fill out. And when it does completely, you know, they've got an incredible number two, and a lot of teams would love to have him as a number one.
Dave, can you maybe paint us a picture of what Jesse Puljujärvi is doing wrong and maybe what he needs to do better in order to get himself back into a regular spot in the Oilers lineup?
This is a damning statement, but hockey IQ appears to be a challenge. That means for, I guess, in a, you know, in another way, is he positionally aware, and is he aware and able to execute his responsibilities defensively? And in the offensive zone, you know, does he know where he should be and where he shouldn't be? And it appears, I mean, and Todd McLellan, his bogey's now been scratched 4 games, Puljujärvi 4 straight games, and who knows about tomorrow night whether he draws in against Chicago. But he's 100 games into his NHL career, so this is not a guy that just arrived. Some people say, well, he's having trouble adjusting because he has a language barrier. That may be the case, but as we've learned from so many, you know, European hockey players who come here, you don't absolutely have to nail English perfectly in order to understand, you know, what's required on the ice. I mean, some of the most brilliant hockey players in the world early in their careers didn't speak a great deal of English. But all of that said, I would suggest it's you know, does he know the role? Is he able to execute it? And is he diligent when he doesn't have the puck and you know, picking up his guy re-entering the Oilers zone? Does he know what he has to do? You know, he's, because of his size and his shot and his skating ability, I'm not going to say hockey's come easily to him, but, you know, I think he's going to be a guy, or at least to this point in his career, he's going to have success just by being him because of, you know, some of the God-given abilities he's got. Well, that only carries you so far in the NHL, certainly in this kind of NHL.
Dave Jamieson is with our sister station, TSN 1260 in Edmonton. He covers the Oilers. Dave, appreciate your time this evening for joining us on the program. You're going to receive a lifetime supply of Big Turk chocolate bars.
I look forward to it, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. When we come back, one final segment on this Wednesday evening. I think it's going to be a Halloween-themed final segment. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Wednesday evening. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio.
Goolsberg,
pardon me. Ezzy Goolsberg, I see Boo or Boo Mandel, and we still don't have a clever, scary nickname for Sean.
I've been thinking all show, and I just can't think. Well, that's of the best, anything.
You know. What about Sean is scary?
But that, no, I mean, no, that's a bad idea.
What are you coming up with, Drew?
Nothing.
You got nothing.
I got nothing. But you know, that's also one
Boo
of my
is
favorite.
A horrible nickname. It doesn't play off of your name at all.
It
at
sure
least Goolsberg,
does. Drew, Boo. It's just it rhymes. One of my favorite parts about the Simpsons Halloween specials is the end credits.
Yeah.
How they always change the name of – they're very clever and change the name of all the you know, the characters and the voices. And each year they think of a new one. Those are pretty clever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously last segment
– don't have a cow, man.
That's not what I'm talking about. But last segment –
like Matt Spooky Grinning or something.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Something
so maybe
like
I'd be Sean not home to give out candy tonight, Assor.
I always remember Hank
Sean,
Azaria.
My host is getting egged at the moment, Assor.
Yeah. Nancy Cartwright.
Nancy
my
Cartwright,
poor paint
yes.
job, Assor.
She was the voice of Bart, or is
the
still
voice is
the of
voice
Bart.
Of Bart.
Yeah.
The Simpsons still on air.
Yeah.
You probably haven't watched
it's
in
like
a few
75
years.
Years in.
Yeah, I know. Those kids haven't aged a day. It's amazing. We heard from Dave Jamieson last segment. And, of course, if you missed any of that, the show will be available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com. It'll also be available on tsn1290.ca. But we heard from Dave Jamieson where he's a fan of the Big Turk bar.
Yep.
I'm not overly...
I don't think you can get the Big Turk in the U.S.
You were saying you brought some Big Turks down to a buddy when you visited him in the States.
Yeah. Shout out to my buddy, our buddy, Daniel Gamer. He lives in San Diego. When we were there for our honeymoon last year, we brought him some Big Turk.
Not our honeymoon.
No.
Your honeymoon with
Naomi
and I. Yeah, we're not married.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you brought him some Big Turk bars, you were
saying. We should go on a honeymoon, though, Drew.
I think that's a terrible idea.
Where would we go if we were going to go on a honeymoon?
Well, the only we've taken actually a surprising number of trips together as part of groups. And
maybe go back to Dallas.
Dallas, we were just in Dallas together. We've been to New York together. We've been to Philadelphia together. We've been to Minneapolis many times together, and we don't want to talk about any of those trips to Minneapolis. Those stories are not fit for radio. But let's not go anywhere else together. That would be my opinion. But the point of this is, given that it's Halloween.
What is the point of this?
What is the point of the last 2 hours? I don't know. Given that it's Halloween and we're, you know, in a candy sort of spirit,
yep.
Your favorite chocolate bars, your favorite candy to receive on Halloween, please, Mr.
Yeah,
Ginsburg.
And Shawnee and I have put together our power rankings. This is our Halloween candy. I don't know, Chris, if you could get some music here, that would be a little bit helpful.
No,
I don't think Chris wants to.
Chris left, in fact. He's no longer associated
Chris
with the
program. Chris isn't even in the room.
Curry only eats carrots and celery.
We've put together our top five candy Halloween candy power rankings. Mm. Now, I'm going from number five all the way up to number one.
Yes.
I actually had to make a late switch. I had Arrow in there.
Ooh, harsh blow to
as
Arrow.
Number five, but I've decided, and this is obviously not including chips.
Chips are not included.
This is candied and chocolate bars.
Uh-huh.
I'm number five, I'm going with Red Skittles.
Only Red Skittles?
Yep.
But
the original.
How do you get a box of just red Skittles?
No, you get the little mini package.
You waste the other Skittles and you just eat the red ones.
I mean, the red package of little...
Original.
Yeah, original. There's tropical.
Yeah,
I like the tropical.
Fair enough. Original.
It's just me.
Number five was for you red Skittles.
Yep. And so I'll give you my five
This might carry over to Saturday's show, by the way.
So at number four,
yeah.
And I've got a very underrated chocolate bar here. That's Wonder Bar. Wonder Bar.
Mm-hmm.
Very chewy. Chris Curry's giving me the thumbs up.
Love
Wonder
Bar.
Even though we have no music here, but I'm going to keep going. Number three, Kit Kat.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of people have Kit Kat at number one. I've got it at number three. By the way, I spent 4 hours coming up with this list.
I don't doubt that for a second.
And the other 4 hours eating candy.
Yeah. That's right. He hasn't seen his daughter in weeks.
Okay, so three Kit Kat. Number two.
Yeah.
This is a classic.
Uh-huh.
This might be number one on Shawnee's list. Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
Not even on the list, but I do enjoy.
Really?
But I do enjoy.
Oh, man.
I do enjoy.
Sean's like, how about you stick to your list, and I'm going to give my list.
I'm pretty sure if you added up all of the Reese's peanut butter cups I've eaten in my lifetime, it would be a number that's, I just can't count that high.
You could take him on a honeymoon with all that money.
It explains why you're now on a diet, I guess.
Okay, number one, and I mean, this is number one for a lot of people. It's got to be Coffee Crisp.
Okay, I'm with you on that one. Yes.
All right.
Sean?
We agree on one, but I'll go from five. Five. I got Mr. Big.
Mm.
I love Mr. Big.
I totally forgot about that.
How can you forget?
And he's going to have to revise his
entire
list.
He's a Mr. He's the classiest chocolate bar out there. Number four, I got to go Snickers.
Yeah.
I like the Snickers. Good peanutty
crunch.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm hungry, I have a Snickers.
Unfortunately, this segment is leaving absolutely nobody satisfied.
Everyone's eating candy right now, though, living vicarious. All right. Number three, I'm going Crispy Crunch.
That's the old one, yeah.
I love Crispy Crunch.
Yep.
Like,
uh-huh.
Kind of like the Butterfinger.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Number two, Kit Kat. Great quality.
By the way, when you eat Butterfinger or Crispy Crunch, does that get caught in your teeth? It always gets caught in my teeth.
All the time.
Yeah.
Well, you
savor that flavor.
You're going to have some dentures. That
nice
really
little tie-in with The Simpsons, by the way, Drew.
Yes, that's true. Butterfinger or Bart.
Yep.
Yeah.
There you go. And number one, like I said, agreeing with my main man, I'm going Coffee Crisp for number one. And I will say this, shout out, honorable mention to M&M Peanuts.
What about Smarties?
I prefer M&M Peanuts.
Smarties are British, and M&M's are American, if I'm not mistaken. Smarties are big overseas, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Drew, were you a big Rocket guy, those pills?
No, those were just awful.
I was a kid,
used
to put them in ginger ale.
I remember that.
In ginger ale?
Yeah. Right. And they'd fizz up.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like Mentos, right? Isn't that what you can do with Mentos? You can
with the Coke
do
and
the science experiments.
What about Airheads, Drew? Do you like Airheads?
Well, you are an Airhead, so I like you. So I don't know. I don't know what else that is.
Too intense. Too sour.
Too sour. Yeah. You know, one chocolate bar that always leaves me disappointed? Twix.
What?
I always think Twix should be better than it is.
It's so good.
It's never quite as good as it. I'm getting outvoted here dramatically by everybody in the studio.
Well,
but I am in favor of your
Big Turk.
I like your Coffee Crisp.
I think what we need to do on Saturday's show is have a candy bar lineup.
Well, that would be right up our Seinfeld.
They're all Twix.
It's all coconut. That's all the coconut.
Yeah. Alrighty, that was a hell of a good segment to end the show. Happy Halloween, everybody. This will be the final program. But I hope you enjoyed the show and all of our guests. We were joined by George Richards from TheAthletic.com to talk about the Florida Panthers. Stephen Wino of the Associated Press and Dave Jamieson of TSN 1260 in Edmonton. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website. It's available at TSN1290.ca and it's available wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For producer Chris Curry, for Sean Assor, for Ezra Ginsburg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck, and thanks for listening to TSN Radio 1290.